Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
Hi, I'm Dave Barnes.
And I'm John McLaughlin.
And welcome to Dadville.
Dadville is a podcast where we talk about life, love, and the pursuit of awesome dadding.
It's funny thoughts and deep talks.
So please, enjoy your time here in Dadville and enjoy this episode with...
Dr. Allison Cook.
Johnny, David. 2 months in, John.
Yep.
Two months in the baseball season.
I know what you're talking
about. It's all happening.
Yeah.
It's all happening. Yeah.
I'll tell you what. I love the new rules.
Okay.
How do you feel about them?
Me dose, my friend. Pitch clock, right?
Right.
No infield shift. And they even made the bases slightly bigger, just a little bit bigger to encourage more base stealing.
Yeah. They're like, their eyes are bigger than their stomachs.
It's kind of.
They got to go get them. Yeah. Dave, if you had to pick one guy all time to steal second base in the bottom of the ninth with two outs in the seventh game of the World Series, who would you choose?
Okay, I think about this almost daily. And
I know.
It might be hourly. I got to go with Ricky Henderson. All day.
Oh, that's a great choice.
Yeah.
It's probably the right answer. You know, Ricky's he's going to get to second.
For sure.
And heck, Dave, pardon the language.
Yep.
He's probably going to steal third, too, while he's at it.
That he would, John. That he would. And speaking of covering bases, stay with me here. Watch what I do.
I'm with you.
Don't watch my left hand, though. That's my trick in.
Oh.
What would you use to cover your nutritional bases every day?
Oh, easy.
Yep.
Easy, Dave. The Ricky Henderson of nutrition, AG1 by Athletic Greens. I'll tell you why. AG1's all-in-one formula makes... I pronounce formula with
a P. No, you do. It's a regal... The way you feel about it makes you want to say it in a regal way.
For formula.
Yeah.
It makes it easy to cover my nutritional bases, Dave.
Yep.
Tying this all together.
Yeah,
I take AG1 every morning... Even before my coffee.
That's hard to believe.
I know. And it makes me feel like I could run fast enough to steal 40 bases if they're big enough.
That's good. That's fair. You know, let's make some big ones. I'm sure it makes you feel great, John.
Yeah.
And I believe that. But it seems like doing a supplement routine would be complicated and take forever.
You know what? I get that a lot. But one scoop a day. Does that sound complicated to you, Dave?
Okay.
Because it's not.
Okay.
AG1 is just one scoop of powder mix with cold water once a day. That's it.
Just one scoop.
One scoop.
Okay.
And that one scoop contains 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food source ingredients of the highest quality, Dave.
This sounds awesome, Johnny.
Because it is.
Like it might be the healthiest thing you can do in under a minute.
Yeah, it's a home run, Dave. I see I'm tying in all the sports things.
I know you're doing great.
AG1 gives me increased energy and mood support, even healthier looking skin, hair, and nails. Look at these skin, hair, and nails that I've got going on.
Can I feel your arm? Oh, wow. That is nice.
Right?
And you're flexing, too, which I appreciate. That's
always flexing.
Yeah. And your hair and nails look quite healthy, too, John. You're knocking it out of the park. Come on.
Thank you, David.
Yeah.
My AG1 is delivered to me every month. Now, I'd go get it.
Yeah.
I'll say right now, you tried to get it. I'd go get it. But
they
make it so easy. They deliver it right to you. So it's been super easy to make it a daily habit. And being on the road is easy, too, thanks to the single-serving travel packs.
John, you know, there's just a couple of things I hate, okay?
Okay.
One, people who blatantly cheat in board games, okay?
You've known that. Don't get me started.
And two, taking pills and vitamins, okay?
Yep.
Yucky McDuck, who I also can't stand.
Oh, right. So there are a lot of things that you
hate. Let's just keep going, because that's get long. So it sounds like AG1 would be a great alternative as a nutritional drink that tastes great, John.
Well, I'll tell you why it sounds that way, because it is, Dave.
Ugh.
And if you're looking for an easier way to take supplements, Athletic Greens is giving you a free one-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs. Oh, the places you could go with those travel packs in your first purchase. Just go to athleticgreens.com/dadville. That's athleticgreens.com/dadville. Check it out.
Boom. Do we call you Doc? Do we just say Doc? Do we come in with Doc Cook, DC?
You can if you want. I don't think anybody's ever called me that.
We're just, listen, let's just see what happens. Let's go. Let's follow our hearts and see where they lead us. Okay, so today we have Dr. Allison Cook. Thank you for being here, Dr. Al. I don't know. We're going to figure it out by the end. We'll figure one.
We'll find it.
So Allison is a PhD, a counselor, speaker, and writer who specializes in the integration of faith and psychology. Studied at Dartmouth, which is immediately intimidating.
Yeah.
So congrats on that.
We'll get back to that.
Yeah, we'll get back to that. Denver Seminary and the University of Denver, where she's, I like that you can tell by where you studied that you were like, yeah, okay, Northeast. And you're like, Denver, no, I like it here. I'm going to stay here longer than going back to the Northeast, where she specialized in integrating psychology and theology. She has two books, The Best of You, which came out in last year, and Boundaries for Your Soul, which was 2018. Also, these are just fun facts, which I love. Congressional aide on Capitol Hill in D.C. and taught at Phillips Exeter Academy, Denver Seminary, and Wyoming State Girls School for Adjudicated. Ooh, yes.
You did it.
Got it.
Oh, I'm so nervous. Dartmouth is just staring me down right now. Teams. and then one of the best fun facts is also a podcaster on this network, on the That Sounds Fun Network, where her weekly email and podcast reach 70,000 million people is what he said, which
that's
feels
right.
maybe a little aggressive.
70,000 million people. Again,
that's literally what Dartmouth it has right now. 70,000 million. And that's just Jason trying to rub stats in our face. He's like, you may not let me on the mic, but I'm gonna just nail you on the numbers. So welcome. We do John wanted to just say one thing as we started here, just to kind of establish some ground rules.
I just want to get back to the Dartmouth thing.
Yeah.
Anytime I meet someone who is an Ivy Leaguer, I wish I could say fellow Ivy Leaguer, but just an Ivy Leaguer, I'm always fascinated by it because it's such a, I can't speak for everyone, but for me, I'm like, even growing up, there was something about like Ivy League schools.
Mm-hmm.
That's like such a cool, amazing achievement and like exclusive and awesome and all that kind of stuff. So I'm always curious, you know, people who have been to an Ivy League school, what are your thoughts on it? Did you grow up with that same kind of view of all those schools, and what was it like going to Dartmouth, all that?
Oh gosh, you're already cracking me up. It's a great question. I don't think anybody's ever asked it to me because it's not one of those schools.
Everybody like wants to ask you.
That's what we do here at Dadville, hard-hitting questions.
We people at Dartmouth, we have a little bit of this thing of, well, we're not Harvard, Yale, or Princeton, where it's like, you know, the immediate thing people grab. So we don't get asked. So I'm
isn't that such a human thing to happen, though? It's like, well, we're Dartmouth. We're not
Harvard, Yale, or Princeton.
The Ivy League. Yeah. How many schools are there in Ivy League? Like 7 or 8 or something like that?
I think there's 7, maybe 8. Yeah. I don't know.
That if people are wondering, they're listening, MTSU, where I went, and John Anderson are considered Poison Ivy. And it's different than the Ivy Leagues. It's a little more dangerous. Anything can happen at any time. And that's, and you may not get a quote unquote education, but you will get a quote unquote good time. And that's kind of their pitching point.
Anderson is the Harvard of Anderson, is what we've always said. MTSU was the Dartmouth of Murfreesboro.
Yeah, North Murfreesboro.
No. But get back to your answer. So what was your experience like?
I loved Dartmouth. I grew up in a tiny town in Wyoming, in rural Wyoming.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah.
That is way out of the way.
Very footloose, my upbringing. And not that my dad was a pastor, but kind of that connotation of small kind of. And so it was already a big leap for me to leave and go to Dartmouth. That wasn't the path. Mm-hmm. But my family did.
What is the path in Wyoming? What is that?
The path, it would probably be the University of Wyoming.
Okay.
And then, you know, back to Sheridan, which was my hometown.
Yeah. Okay.
Which actually we spend a ton of time there now. We love it. But my dad had gone to Dartmouth. He was kind of if you've ever seen that movie, A River Runs Through It, like literally my dad. Fly fishing and then just wanted to go somewhere else to fly fish some more.
Is he handsome?
Well,
that's all that I can remember.
Yeah.
Just
now I'm going to be distracted. I'm just thinking about Brad Pitt fly fishing the whole time.
Your dad is Brad Pitt.
That was it. Yes. The secret is now out. Anyway, so when I got there, I felt a bit like a fish out of water. It was before the internet. That ages me, but like we didn't understand in Wyoming what people were wearing in New England. And so like I had permed hair and I wore a little brown checkered vest. Not that I was a cowgirl per se, but you know, and that wasn't happening, you know, in New England. And so, yeah. So it took me like 2 or 3 months to adjust. But once I did, I just loved it. I loved it. I had a blast. I loved being with so many different kinds of people. It was actually great for my faith. Loved it from that vantage point. It was one of the richest times for me. It was just a really, that was just a cool time. I loved it.
That I have stepped literally feet into Montana because but I'm still claiming it because, you know, touring artists like John and I, it's a big thing is like checking off all the states, and I hadn't done Montana. And so we did Yellowstone and we stayed in, East, what is it called? Like the very, very eastern part right there on Yellowstone, but we stayed just inside of it, you know? So, but I was like, hey, it counts. I proudly checked that off.
Yeah.
But obviously you guys are all the rage now with, you know, everybody's like, everybody's all about some Montana right now. Kevin Costner is just up there smiling, just waving people into the state. He's just doing this. He's like, come on.
And they are all coming. We laughed during the pandemic. We were able to spend much of the pandemic there. And it's my hometown, but we had driven. And so we had our Massachusetts license plate. Uh-huh. And we did definitely get a few, you know, because there were just too many folks coming in. I had to tell my family, I was like, they're really nice people, even though they are really mad at us with this license plate coming
in. Put the lassos up.
That's how we feel in Nashville. There's a great bumper sticker in Nashville called that says, welcome to Nashville. Y'all go home now.
Yeah. Oh,
yes. We like to think that we're the Montana of the South.
The Dartmouth of the Montana of the South, of the Wyoming. Anyway.
Might be the Harvard. It's pretty cool.
Well, thank you. Thank you. So I have to say, this is a really fun moment. So John and I, when we get together, we prep these, we kind of talk about all the things we want to talk about, you know. But we were having this discussion toward the end of our prep about just kind of being married and being dads. And we both went, oh, my gosh, this will be a great thing because it's top of mind to talk to you about because this is, you know, you're an expert in these things. And I would love to get your perspective on this because it's an immediate conversation we're having and trying to sort of, you know, figure out or not figure out. There's my manhood. Like, we got to figure it out. We got to fix it. But you got to understand better. Yeah. Thank you. Sit within it and be still. And be calm and know that we don't have to fix anything. Yeah. And we're wonderfully made as we are. I would love your perspective and wisdom on this. Something that like my wife and I have been talking about recently is this with kids, how it feels like how they relate to her and how they act around her is very different from how they relate to and act around me. And so it seems like there's so many days where her experience with them is much more weighted and hard and the way they act toward her. And so she'll tell me, and she's like, I mean, the greatest example of this is always like when, you know, mom goes away for the weekend and you have the kids and there's that sort of sitcom worthy moment where she gets, you know, she Ubers and she's sitting there and she's walking in with her bags and she's ready to hear you go like, God, I'm so ready. They have just been wearing me out. I haven't slept in two nights, you know, and you're crying. And instead, like me and my dad friends always laugh. It's like, how'd you do? And you're like, that's pretty great. And she's like, what do you mean? It's pretty great. And you're like, I mean, they were pretty great. I mean, pretty chill. And then you leave for the weekend and it's like World War III, you know? So John, do you want to add to that question? I know you had a thought this morning too.
Just add that it seems like the connection between my wife, Amy, and our two daughters, it's just more intense. Everything about it is more intense. Maybe they're higher highs, lower lows, or whatever. But my first iteration and experience with what Dave's describing was when our oldest was just born. And my wife and I got into this little tiff about where I was kind of saying to her, like, well, just put Luca in the bumbo and take a shower. Cause my wife was like, I can't even take a shower. I can't, like, I need you here to do these things. I'm like, I just put her in the bumbo and I take a shower and she's fine. But she's like, if I do that, she will lose her mind. She can't see me and not be with me. And it's just that I don't have that relationship with her so far. There just seems to be more of an intensity around that And we're just wondering if that's been, if you've observed that, or is that just Dave and I? And
there's psychological help. Data to back that up from empirical evidence. You know, it's a really interesting question. I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind in terms of attachment, right, is attachment takes on different forms, and often the mother is the I mean, even literally the baby is literally in her stomach. The child is literally attached to her through the umbilical cord. She is literally, you know, there is that sense of that primary attachment figure. Because what you were describing made me think of attachment, where she, you know, the child really, you know, is, has that secure attachment with the mom. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean that they don't have the secure attachment with you guys.
Right.
It just takes on a different connotation. And so I think that's kind of the first place I go with that, is just the biology of it. I think that can change depending on the relationship. So I'm in an interesting situation in my family, in that my husband was a widower when we met. And had two very young children who had lost their mom, lost their biological mom, and who showed that very same kind of attachment with him. And it was so interesting, because for him, it was hard for other guys to relate.
Mm-hmm.
So he would have that same kind of mom feeling of like, oh my gosh, and I watched it and I had the dad feeling.
Wow.
As we got, you know, as we came together, we merged our families and blended. I felt, the more I thought about my role, I was like, because they're definitely attached to me. They love me. They were very young when we met. But that primary attachment is with him. So that's the other thought that came to my mind as I was listening to him. We would talk about it a lot, because he's like, other guys don't get this, that I can't just come and go. Yeah. So there's something that the kids kind of know viscerally about that person, you know, that around which their whole world sort of hangs in a way, you know.
It is remarkable. Like I watched that happen, and you can definitely tell. I always wonder. I'm like, I wonder if it's just that we are, as men, we're just too like emotionally. We're not as emotionally articulate, and or, you know, we're just not going to pick up on the nuances. Probably like my wife would. And so there, John and I went on the first week, and she left, and they were really great. And we were laughing about this, because I was telling John, and I was like, I think it's just that they know they can't manipulate me because I'm not smart enough to be manipulated. You know what I mean? It's like, I think they look at that like, hey, let's do the thing. And like, that's not what, just stop. He's not.
He's not.
You know what I mean? Like, so I think there is, but it's interesting to hear that with your husband, because, you know, they would have obviously been so close to him.
Well, if you think about what you're saying, you think about emotional attunement, which is really what underlies attachment. It's present. So it was, that's why I was kind of laughing a little bit when you guys were kind of being like, oh, we need to like be present to the moment, right? That it's that presence, which isn't so much about doing, or it's that withness. Mm-hmm. Kurt Thompson always talks about that withness, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what children are just absorbing. That's what's creating attachment, they've discovered. It's less about, you know, even amount of time. And it's that total whole body presence where your whole nervous system is attuned to the child. Mm-hmm. And I do think, you know, again, this is sort of this can differ. Again, like it differs in my family, but probably that, you know, you're seeing that with your wives, that whole body attunement that gets at empathy, that gets at presence, that gets at that sitting, being with versus, all right, what are we going to do? Let's go. You know, just a different kind of energy. And kids really respond almost at that nervous system level to that attunement.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's not that, you know, no, it's not that guys can't do that. It's just also by default in a marriage, usually one portion of the couple does more of that than the other. And typically it's, you know, the woman.
Well, as you're describing that, my mind immediately goes to our phones. Like what you're describing, that kids are so immediately attuned to, I'm like, our freaking phones are eating away at that
100%.
Like crazy.
Yep.
I mean, there, you know, I've heard that there is dad. I think it was another one of our interviews that we did that now I'm blanking on. It's Kurt Thompson, I think. Kurt Thompson said something about the data that they have on, like, even if your phone is in the room when you're with your kids, there's some sort of block that happens. Like the kids are triangulating or something like that, or they feel like you're triangulating with the phone or something like that. It's just,
yeah, that fullness of presence is interrupted in so many ways when that happens. You're exactly right. And it's so important that presence. And what I say to people, to parents, because you can kind of feel like, oh gosh, do I need to be, you know, present in that kind of, which requires a little bit of that calm nervous system in oneself, right? So much of parenting is regulating our own nervous system so that we can provide that for our children so that they can kind of ping off of it as they're learning to regulate their own nervous systems. And what I always say to people is it's not 100% of the time, but you do need to make sure you are creating that space a little bit every day. You know, when I talk to my single mom clients, you know, it's, you know, where they're working and, you know, it's just like, give them a little bit every day, a little bit of that whole body. I'm calm now. I'm all yours. And it's really, when you think about it, that's what we experience when we experience God's presence. It's that withness, that just complete attunement. I'm with you. We're giving our kids a little glimpse of that. It's powerful.
Hey, Dave.
John.
Don't laugh at me. Look, I need to tell you something.
Okay.
I almost didn't make it over here.
Oh, no. What's up? Yeah. Oh, let me guess. You forgot where I lived.
No. That was just one time.
Okay.
No, the reason is I was looking at Luca today, and she didn't seem right. She seemed like she wasn't feeling well.
What'd you do?
Yeah. Well, I slipped this father-daughter friendship band on her wrist. She thinks it's just a cool watch, but in reality, it has superpowers.
Oh, are we talking like seriously, I'm not kidding. Is it like invisibility, or can she fly? Or?
Well, not quite,
okay.
But it made her nauseous feeling go away.
Oh,
so.
Wait, was it a relief band?
You nailed it.
Oh, yes.
I just told her it was a father-daughter friendship.
No, I get that.
That's right, Dave. Today's episode is sponsored by Relief Band, the number one FDA-approved anti-nausea wristband that has been clinically proven to quickly and effectively prevent nausea and vomiting. You hate nausea and vomiting.
I've had it for years.
Yeah, right? This will help. The nausea and vomiting associated with motion sickness, anxiety, migraines, hangovers, morning sickness, chemotherapy, and more.
Oh my gosh, I really wish I had this in college, right, John?
Hey, come on.
I was crazy. That's not actually true. This could be a way, though, I thought about this, to weed out those kids who think they're too sick to go to school. Gotcha. And for the record, I'm very glad my parents didn't have this level of technology.
Oh, right?
When we were kids, because I might have maybe fudged a couple times on how I was feeling. Just a couple times.
No, you're right. We keep one on hand around the house just in case, and it's become kind of part of our household first aid kit.
Yeah. I used it just the other day after I spent an afternoon in Dollywood. I rode too many rides. Look, I'm going to do it, John.
You're going to do it.
It's something
you're
crazy. I love, okay?
You're crazy Dave.
Too much pizza and too many spin rides, okay?
Yep.
And old Uncle Dave might have needed a little help steadying myself. That's all
I love it when you call yourself Uncle Dave. Listen, those teacups will get you
every time.
They are silent assassins.
Yes.
Yeah, more people need to be aware of this, especially well-meaning parents.
Well, I'll tell you that. Those cups didn't see coming, and that was Relief Band. Because it neutralized it into an enjoyable afternoon.
Gone.
Yep.
So if you always have a flashlight on hand for a blackout or a first aid kit on hand for emergencies, then you need Relief Band for those unexpected nausea moments.
That's right. And right now, we've got an exclusive offer just for Dadville listeners. If you go to reliefband.com and use promo code Dadville, you'll receive 20% off plus free shipping.
So head to R-E-L-I-E-F-B-A-N-D.
Great spelling.
.com and use our promo code Dadville for 20% off plus free shipping. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Johnny.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, just quick question for you.
Yeah.
What do you think pediatricians have nightmares about?
I've been
meaning to ask you this for months.
That's an interesting one, John. Yeah. I'd have to think that kids jumping on a bed while eating lollipops would have to be at least in the top 10.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, what about kids eating their lunches, then immediately getting into the pool to swim?
Ooh, that's a good one. I remember that one. I wonder if one would be that they're trying to measure a child's weight on the scale that they have the doctor's office, but they keep sliding a little counterweight piece back and forth, but it's always either too much or too little, and they would never get it to balance, and the whole nightmare is just that thing.
That's actually one of my nightmares, and I'm barely a pediatrician. Okay, how about this one?
Okay.
And I think this would be the worst one.
Okay.
Children's vitamins that are basically just candy in disguise, right? I mean, picture this. Filled with sugar, unhealthy chemicals, and other...
Don't say gummy junk.
Gummy junk.
I knew you were
gummy junk.
Say it.
That growing kids, they should never eat.
Man, I hope we don't have any pediatricians listening right now. And if you are, we are so sorry. Because they may have to hit the mute on that one. That's just too much.
But listen, it's okay.
No.
They don't have to be afraid. They can rest easy in a dreamlike state because this is why Hiya was created, Dave.
Yep.
Hiya is the pediatrician-approved, super-powered, chewable children's vitamin.
That's right, Johnny. Hiya was created to fill in the most common gaps in modern children's diets to provide the full-body nourishment our kids need. Guess what it's got, though, John?
It's got that yummy taste.
Yummy taste they
yummy
love.
Taste that they love. But, Dave, was Hiya formulated with the help of nutritional experts, or did they just wing it?
What do you think this is, jazz, John? No, man. They're experts. And those nutritional experts expressed 12. Some people were going to guess 11, but they're always wrong. Everybody's always like, 11. No, it's 12.
Yeah.
Organic fruits and veggies. Then supercharged Hiya with 15 essential vitamins and minerals, including vitamin D, B12, C, zinc,
folate,
and many others to help support immunity, energy, brain function, mood, concentration, teeth, bones, and more.
Oh, my goodness. It sounds so good, but my kids have all the allergies.
Stop worrying, okay? Bob Marley was all over us about this, okay? Hiya is a non-GMO, vegan, dairy-free, allergy-free, gelatin-free, nut-free, and everything else you can imagine.
Okay. But I don't want to be wasting plastic with, like, some new bottle mailed to me every month. And I feel guilty about that.
Guess who understands you, John?
Hiya does.
Yeah, well, I was going to say Amy.
Oh,
and me.
Yeah.
And Hiya. That's why they send you this cool bottle with stickers for your kids to decorate. And then they send you eco-friendly refills every month. My kids love decorating the bottle almost as much as they love the taste of Hiya chewable vitamins,
hey,
John.
Dave, sign me
okay.
up.
Okay, I'm going to.
Hiya's children's vitamins are sent straight to my door.
Yep.
So that's one less thing I got to worry
They're
about.
They're not throwing it in the yard.
No.
Gosh.
No.
Why would they do that?
And even then, I would be grateful, right? But they take it right to your door. Now, we've worked out a special deal with Hiya for their best-selling children's vitamins. You can receive 50% off. You thought I said 15.
No.
50% off. That's half, if my math is correct. 50% off your first order. To claim this deal, all you got to do is go to HiyaHealth.com/Dadville. And this deal is not available
on
the regular
website. Don't go there.
Don't go to the regular website.
Go to HiyaHealth.com/Dadville and get your kids the full body nourishment they need to grow into healthy adults.
That's great. Do you find any times, or like for those who are listening, are kind of like, when would I do that? Like, do you find like dinner is good for that? Or, you know, have you seen with kids, there are times where they kind of, that tends to work better schedule wise than other times?
I would say do what works best for you as the parent. They just need it. The kids need it. And it really does differ depending on your life circumstances. For some folks, it's right before bed. It's just for whatever reason, at the end of the day, the parent can just kind of do their thing, let go of their own day, totally calm themselves and be fully present in those few precious moments before bed. But some parents are like, that doesn't work for me. I'm out. I'm asleep. I got to do it in the morning.
Hmm.
Some kids, you know, we see this a lot with guys, you know, I don't know if this is the same for you guys, but a lot of, you know, one of the sort of gender stereotypes is, you know, screen time, being in the car, moving where you're facing forward.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not
intense,
but you know, that's what I would do with my stepson, right? It was like, we're in the car. That's when I could just fully attune and kind of be, you know, where they're, you know, but you, and you can feel it energetically. You can feel, he knows I'm with him, but I'm also not like staring him down, like talking to me now.
Yeah.
Just vulturing above him watching.
Exactly.
So does that, cause I have two girls.
Yeah.
I feel like I like that. I like the sort of like, let's do a project together. And then we can maybe like in the midst of having this car ride or working on these Legos, we can talk about something. Does it have the same effectiveness on girls, or is it more of a male thing?
Oh, I think it's great. I think it's beautiful. It's interesting because what you're doing with your daughters is introducing that idea of activity-based connection, activity-based attachment, which is slightly different and still wonderful and still so important. You're helping your daughters in some ways prepare for that kind of relationship going forward, right? That it's not always about, we're just going to sit here and be with each other and all of our emotions, that sometimes it's really nice to be with someone and you're modeling that for her when we're doing something together and we're engaged in work together. It is a different type of attachment that I do think is more masculine, but it's a gift you're giving to your daughters. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, and I think, I mean, for me, I feel like you see, maybe this is like when I went off to college and you kind of can see your friends' relationships with their parents, particularly my guy friends with their dads. And something that I've just observed anecdotally is, as long as you have one thing, like for this, the most stereotypical thing would be like baseball, where it's like, if you have one thing, maybe it could be, you know, soccer or something like Dave with his boys, whatever. I've just seen the power of just that one little thing, that one way in, you know, can be really 100%. Powerful. Yeah.
We talk a lot about developing. You are already in the process of, right? So as a dad, as a parent, you're launching your job, even when they're really young, is to prepare them for adulthood, which is so hard for us to realize. We are actually preparing our kids when we're doing a really good job. We're preparing our kids to be able to leave us and go out and live their own lives, which means we're providing that really safe space from which they can develop. And part of that, as they get older, you're building in those lifelong activities, those lifelong, and it's really smart. We started doing that very intentionally with our kids, even in middle school and high school. Like, what are the things we're going to want to be doing together when we're, you know, 30 years from now?
Wow.
And then you have those things, you kind of build those in because you're preparing for the next developmental stage, right? Each developmental stage with these kids, they are going to be, they're going to be individuating a little bit more. They're going to be moving away from home base. And as you've kind of prepared them to do that, the good news is they'll start to be more into their friends. But at every stage, you're continuing, instead of trying to pull them back, you're continuing to pull that thread through of, these are the things we have and we'll have these forever. And again, that's that ongoing attachment. That's that ongoing, there's different ways to orient to it.
What were some of those things that y'all did? I love that idea.
Lot based in the outdoors, which is where the mountains came in, is we all share a love of the outdoors. So kind of, you said baseball, you know, for us, it's hiking. It's for my husband and our son, fly fishing, but just being very intentional about these are things we can do together. And whether or not they're our favorite things, you kind of, you know, that's where you kind of figure out those things that kind of work for everybody. And then naming is such a big deal. This is something that we do. This is something we love. This is kind of part of our DNA, because you're setting the stage for that.
Okay, so you specialize in the integration of faith and psychology, which is really interesting. And I think it's an interesting time right now. You know, I am all for, you know, therapy and counseling, and Dave and I both have talked about that a lot, and getting to know yourself as an individual, that self-care, all that, whatever term you want to use. Obviously, just like anything, that can be taken too far or whatever. And I think that it can be tricky for some people, maybe especially Christians, who can maybe struggle with that idea because it elevates the individual over, you know, the more corporate or whatever. Can you talk about the benefits of that and like why is it important to understand yourself and all that kind of stuff for the sake of all your relationships? And
that's a great question. And in my most recent book, The Best of You, one of the things I really unpack is this concept of denying yourself, mm-hmm. right? Which is what, as a Christian, we're supposed to deny the self. We're supposed to die to ourselves. And what I'm really walking through in that book is this whole idea of, but we do that for a reason. Number one, there's two things. One, we are, you know, if you look at Jesus's words, you know, the grain of seed that falls to the ground, it has to become something more. And in order to become something more, it has to die. It has to go beneath the ground as if it's, you know, buried. Mm-hmm. And so, but there is that, but it, so that it can become what it really is. Mm-hmm. Right. And so there's that piece of it that I'm not sure we talk about enough. We talk a lot about the self-denial without also talking about so that you can become even more of this incredible human, this incredible soul that God made. And in our culture, right, we're holding that intention because you can go to one extreme or the other. You know, you can go to that's all about me and my beautiful human potential, and you can go to that's never about me. And I talk about this idea of selfhood as being, it's really the both and of I am going, you know, I want to become more of the person God made. And I do that so that I can show up even more powerfully for you, right? Mm-hmm. I can show up even more, you know, more effectively for other people. A lot of what I talk about for folks, or what I see, especially if we're thinking about trauma, we're thinking about these attachment wounds. And so I kind of go through these developmental stages. If we don't get as children this baseline sense of our inherent belovedness, right? And you see it with your kids, you know, they need, they're little sponges for needing love. And if kids don't get that, if there's a deficit of that for whatever reason, and the statistics on kids that don't have that are really high, that don't have that baseline support, and then you're going through and maybe you're part of a Christian community and you're here, well, I need to die to myself, but you never got that baseline sense that there was a self worth loving. And so this is, I think, we're in the therapeutic community, and there's more and more and more of us coming alongside and threading that needle of, we sometimes need to repair a self, and we need to repair some of these attachment wounds, and we need to heal the self before we can really understand what it means to then maybe, you know, work on denying aspects of the self. Mm-hmm. The other thing I like to think about with that is sometimes we need to deny aspects of ourself that are parts of how we've learned to cope in unhealthy ways that are there for a reason, right? So there's so much nuance, I think, that psychology brings to that conversation that isn't in tension with growing to be more like Christ, to growing in your character and growing in how you can contribute to your community. It's just that we have to make sure we're not bypassing that healing piece that needs to happen for all of us.
That's a beautiful thought. That's fascinating.
Well, that's been really one of the things that I have learned in these last 6 years of kind of going to counseling and doing that kind of self reflection and all that and self observation are the things that you just mentioned, like the sort of the coping behavioral patterns that we do that we don't even realize that we do.
Yeah. Hmm.
You know, that can be so, that was really eye-opening for me. And in the name of denying the self or whatever, you can be blind to that kind of stuff and really not even see the patterns that you're doing for years and years and years and why you're doing them. You know?
Yeah. If you're not careful and you go too quickly to that, you can deny the wrong things. Mm-hmm. Right. And so if we think about it through the attachment lens, for example, if you've had a wound where you weren't cared for, or, you know, even the best of families where someone, your parents were just busy and didn't know how to, they were working really hard and couldn't pay the bills, and they gave you food and they gave you a place to sleep and weren't terrible people, but you just didn't get much emotional nurturing. So there's an attachment wound. And so maybe you're going into relationships looking to get those needs met. So we're just going to cut that off. We just need to cut that out. And you just need to, but we haven't healed the wound.
Yeah, right.
We haven't
healed
the wound. And so that's one of those coping strategies, right? That we got to look at and go, why is it there? I always say these are cues, or to use the mountain terminology, these are trailheads of there's a trail I need to go down. Let's not be so quick to just cut it off. There's a trail of healing here. I need to go down this path to figure out why I do that. What's going on there? Why did that develop that way so that I can change it in a healthy way?
That's good. Which takes, as you said, I mean, like John was saying, it actually takes work to on ourselves to even get there, which I think is really scary for some people, because it feels like, well, I don't want to stare at myself and make this all about me. But I think to realize what needs to be healed, a lot of times you got to do that. Like, you can't know that without looking in the mirror going, oh, I'm like missing an arm. You know, I was wondering why it was so hard for me to pick up a basketball. So one of the things, you know, you've written about turning off the internal negative voice. I mean, kind of in the space that John was bringing up and experiencing, I love this, the true loving God, and why he isn't, you know, trying to beat you up, and who isn't trying to beat you up. Why do you think this is such a struggle for us? And is there any sense of like, this is being heightened in this day and age with just the way that the world is, you know?
Yeah, that inner critic is brutal. And I you know, that's a really good question. I haven't thought about it in the context of sort of our current. I do think social media exacerbates it and just gives it all these different names of comparison, and, you know, just the heightened access we have to everything around us, and all the information certainly only exacerbates our own inner critic. You know, I think it's part of the nature of who we are, that it's easier in many ways to sort of crucify it's sort of easier for me to crucify myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want to blame ourselves versus kind of that open-handed posture of, oh, this is so hard. The thing beneath the thing, and that's one of those things that just gets habituated. We don't even realize it. People don't even realize the kinds of stuff they're telling themselves all day long.
That revelation for me, we've had a few guests on that have kind of talked about, I know John Acuff talks a lot about the inner critic, but it's like, that's the scariest thing, is when you don't even realize that you're doing it. And I think there's a lot of that's something I've had to watch in myself. And I've really, really had to pray a lot about, is like, how, when that voice comes up, not to go like, oh no, that's a normal voice. That's Chuck. Yeah. You know, it's like, no, man, like that's, you're not
and
being...
I've been together.
Chuck is my bro,
years,
man. Me and Chucky, but you know, realizing like that is not healthy and is really contributing to a lot of problems that I have kind of with myself, is because I'm just sort of like going, yeah, he's right. I mean, you know, that's what we do.
What's sort of mind blowing about the inner critic, though, is that typically it's a part of us that learned to cope.
Yeah.
And so we also don't want to beat ourselves up for the inner critic. And so we have to learn to understand. I like it that you name it, Chuck, because you sort of have to go, all right, you're trying to help. You're trying to motivate me. It's not helping me, you know. What's the intention behind that? And again, this develops so much. And so I feel so bad for parents, you know, for all of us, because like all this develops in childhood, right? Even in the best of families, right? But you develop these coping strategies.
It could just be said, you alluded to it earlier. I mean, when you talk about like the baggage that you're bringing into different relationships and all that, I mean, could it be said, and this may be the most obvious thing, but it's like, it's all there. We got to figure out what our baggage is, but there's no one who has no baggage.
100%.
There's no one who has no wounds.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It is. And I think, again, kind of to go back to the, you know, I think, you know, a couple hundred years ago, we would just say it's all a sin problem, right? It's all sin. Now in our modern era, we're kind of all wounded, right? And I go back and forth, like, what are we wounded? You know, people, you know, what is it? And I'm like, I think it's just an amalgamation of, you know, cause it's an and the two are tied, you know. First of all, if you look at sin, my big thing is let's just remove the shame out of it. It's just this simple thing of we miss the mark first and foremost. So let's just start with that. And second of all, sometimes it's because of wounds, you know, we're just going to pick up a wound or two, even in the best of situations. And And if we didn't, which is impossible, we'd also pick up just stuff from inside of us that, you know, it's just kind of part of the condition, but there's just no way around it. It doesn't matter. You know, you can have the most loving parents in the world. You're going to pick up a wound or two at school. You're going to pick up a wound or two just walking out into your sidewalk. It's just the way it is.
Hey, Dave, is that you? Is that you?
Yes. Do I look different? Why are you asking me that?
Well, I mean, I don't mean to alarm you.
Okay.
David, it appears as though you were severely sunburned completely all over your body, but particularly on your face.
Yeah.
I mean, what happened?
Okay, well, I didn't know if you noticed. I'm kind of embarrassed to admit this, but any of the kids asked if I could prepare some wild caught seafood for dinner tonight. So I spent the better part of this morning. Nobody really knows, but fly fishing on the Tennessee River. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you have any luck?
I'll tell you what I didn't catch. A break or any fish. That's a big negative. That is bad negative, yeah.
Man, well, I wish you would have come to me first, because I have more than enough wild-caught seafood to share with the entire family.
Well, you know what? Color me impressed, John, because I did not know you were a fisherman.
Oh, Dave, I am not a fisherman. In fact, I've never caught a fish in my life. I am an award-winning musician and podcaster, but here's why I have all this fish.
I would love to know the reveal.
Because I signed up for ButcherBox.
ButcherBox?
Yeah, ButcherBox, Dave.
Okay.
ButcherBox, I'll say it one more time.
Yep.
ButcherBox is delivered right to my doorstep for free.
I was scared you.
And
were
I'm able
that.
To, I'm able to custom curate my box. I can put it can be all wild cut salmon.
Yeah,
or caught salmon.
Listen, either way, it's gonna happen. Okay.
So I can select from so many options, like 100% grass fed beef. You know how I'm like when those cows are fed grass. Free range organic chicken, pork that is raised crate free, and your favorite wild caught seafood.
Wait, hold on. 100% grass-fed.
That's right.
Like, not even one dandelion sneaks.
They pick out all the dandelions.
Oh, God.
It's a grassy mountainside meadow right out of the Sound of Music.
Man, if that grass can make the hills come alive, Johnny, imagine what it can do for my beef.
That's
okay?
Right.
But what if I get all this meat on my doorstep?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know any good recipes.
Dave, great question, and not to worry.
It's hard not to,
That's
John.
Why. Because ButcherBox includes recipe inspiration, guides, tips, hacks.
Love hacks.
Along with exclusive member deals, including one just for Dadville
whoa,
listeners.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. The double B.
That's right.
ButcherBox is giving us a special deal.
That's
me
right,
and you,
Dave.
And all our listeners.
If you sign up today using the code DADVILLE, you can receive ground beef for a year plus $20 off your first order. That's right.
Well, I'm just going to let's double down. That's 2 pounds of ground beef free in every box for a year plus $20 off your first order when you sign up at Tell 'em John, butcherbox.com/DADVILLE. And use the code what, John?
DADVILLE. That's right.
Man,
Dave,
Louise, yeah.
I want to give a shout out. And when I give a shout out, I always laugh because it just brings me so much joy to give a shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with free samples.
You know it, John. This time of year, my allergies are in fuego. They're always on the attack, but I use this and you should too.
Oh, I do, Dave. Every day in our house.
Yeah.
Luckily, for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D.
Designed for serious allergy sufferers, which is me raising my hand, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill to relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better.
This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, and itchy nose and throat and sinus congestion and pressure with ease.
John, I've been taking Claritin D for my allergies for a long time, and it's been an absolute life changer. I can go for a run without my eyes watering. I may be crying, but it's not from allergies.
Totally different.
And I can sing without feeling like I have like a big old, let's not even call it a frog. It's like a toad.
It's like a family of toads.
It's a family. It's a turtle.
Yeah.
In my throat.
So, you ready to live life as if you don't have allergies?
Yeah, me.
It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter.
Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin clear. Use as directed.
Dave.
Hey, yes.
Can I ask you a question?
Uh-huh.
What are you so happy about?
Jonathan, my good man. After 20 long, sometimes unbearable seasons, it appears as though my beloved Gunners are going to win the league.
Oh, man, that's great. I mean, yeah. Congrats to all the Arsenal fans out there.
Listen, let's not offer congratulations just yet. Okay. I mean, it's pretty much in the bag, but they just need to close out the season with a couple more wins. And tell you what, I'm going to be right back. Just going to make sure they seal the deal. Don't go anywhere. Hold on.
Okay. I'll stay right.
Well, so they blew it. It's not happening.
Wow.
It's all over.
Dave, that was embarrassingly fast how quickly the wheels came off then.
Did you happen to do anything while I was gone to check in on that?
Well, as a matter of fact, Dave, I did. Even though that was such a short amount of time, I started an online business. Clown suits for Arsenal fans.
Okay. Real cool.
Yeah.
But honestly, how did you do that so quickly, actually? I am interested. What's that sound?
I'll tell you, Dave. That's the sound of Shopify. Let's talk about the commerce platform that's revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide.
Yeah.
I've been using Shopify for years. Decades. And it makes selling things online so easy. Even my clown suits for Arsenal fans flying off the shelves.
I like it less every time you say it. Is it true that Shopify covers every sales channel from an in-person point-of-sale system to an all-in-one e-commerce platform and even lets you sell across social media marketplaces like TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram?
Why, yes, Dave, it is true. Plus, Shopify is also packed with industry-leading tools ready to ignite. That's the sound of ignition.
Ooh, love that.
Your growth. It gives you complete control over your business and your brand without having to learn any new skills or design or code. I'm not going to learn that stuff.
Can I tell you what's incredible to me?
Please.
Your forearms. Two.
Thank you.
How Shopify is, no matter how big you want to grow, they are there to empower you with the confidence and control, we call it the two C's, to take your business to the next level.
That's right. Now it's your turn to get serious about selling and try Shopify today, listener. Sign up for a $1 per month. You heard me right.
Goodness gracious.
$1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dadville, all lowercase.
Go to shopify.com/dadville to take your business to the next level today.
That's shopify.com/dadville. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify.
It's honestly one of the reasons that we do this podcast, but I think one of the most overwhelming feelings that I have consistently as a parent is knowing that, you know, so many times when you talk to someone, and I remember this being a seismic moment in my sort of just like growing up, is in college, sort of putting two and two together on so many of the problems that me and my friends had, you could kind of trace to our parents in some way. And it wasn't even really dramatic things. It'd be silly things or funny things. But, you know, I really would sit with my friends who came from certain types of home and realize, like, man, they are carrying a real weight from that. And then other friends that were from other homes and they were carrying this weight. And then the ones who didn't, I was so fascinated. It was like, wow, you had parents that were really attentive. And it's not that they were scarless at all. That's not the point. But it just seemed like, and so for me, something I've struggled with my whole life is just the abject terror in some ways of realizing that some of the weight that we sort of passed down as parents is on us. I mean, you're right. Some of it's not at all. I mean, you know, I saw this great clip of this, I don't know, genetics guy or something, but he was just saying, like, you know, to alleviate parents, it was the most fascinating little sound clip. Cause he's like, look, there's all of these things that are just written into your body that are just there. So like you can, you know, it's your kid's going to come out your kid. Yeah. And I need to hear that a lot, because I'm sort of the school, if I'm not careful, where I'm like, man, this is on you, bro. Like, it is on you. You know, every little bump and wound and scar is going to be father initiated or you know, parental initiated. And I think it's good. Those kind of things for me, that's one of those things that I can't hear enough, because it gives a lot of grace to, you know, they are going to be what they are. And granted, we have a huge responsibility in that, obviously a huge responsibility, but you know, the world's the world. Like, their friends are their friends. Their friends' parents are their friends' parents.
Yep.
And there's just going to be a lot of things you just can't control, you know?
It's both. And the science supports that it's totally nature and it's totally nurture.
It's both,
you almost can't tease it out, you know, when you look at these twin studies that are so fascinating,
right,
where you separate two twins and they're raised in completely different environments and they turn out so similarly.
That is fascinating.
It's fascinating research. And so you really, what you're saying is true. We have a part to play and there's a lot that's nature that we don't have control over. And so it is, it's that balancing act of taking, and again, that's where it's really so much of parenting is about our own growth.
Our own holding
on when we need to hold on and letting go of what we need to let go of. And I always say to parents, you know, your goal isn't to prevent wounds or, you know, for your children, never. My goal, I would say, is I want always to keep the lines of communication open.
Yeah, that's great. That's great.
So that when my kid is 30 going, why did you do that? I'm like, you know what? I really messed that up. You are right.
Yes,
you know?
That's great.
And when they're
50, so
that again, going back to that attachment, that there's just that relationship. That's what I'm after. You know, it's not perfection. It's not getting it. But that requires me to do my own work so that I am receptive to when they're like, why do you, because our kids are starting to do that. You know, they're in their 20s now. And pretty smart, and they think that, you know, and you know, we think we did a pretty good job and they're great kids and all this stuff, but you know, they're willing to kind of be like, that wasn't so great, you know, and you gotta go, yeah, you're right, you know.
I think about that day a lot, and my wife and I always say, like, it's gonna be the thing that we swore we nailed that they're gonna be like, yeah, you didn't do that well. And I'm like, no, that I thought you were going to talk about all this stuff. Like, I was on my phone a lot, but not like, I don't know what it'll be, but
I have to tell myself this, because what I tell other people is how awesome that they feel safe enough and free enough to tell you.
Exactly. If they're telling you, that's a win.
100%. Yeah. Can you imagine, like, can you imagine being able to tell your parents like that, you know, having that kind of open conversation? Mm. That's a lot of safety.
Yeah.
That's the goal.
I think some of that too, I mean, I was talking with a buddy about this yesterday, is just, I think that's why, again, what John asked a few minutes ago and you were speaking to is so important, because the hope, because again, to your point, Allison, like, it's going to happen. Like, the scars are coming, you know, bumps, bruises, the whole thing, is that when, and prayerfully, they do sit with you probably around the age of your kids, where you're really getting, you know, they're getting a sense of like, wait a sec, that's not what they said or whatever, that when they do come and sit with you, and hopefully they do, I think that's where our work hopefully is to know ourselves, to be well acquainted with our own sin and shadow selves, so that when they do say, hey, mom, you know, you kind of did this thing, you don't go, because this is where I see the disconnect so much with my friends and their parents. In the ages we are, where you kind of sit and you're like, hey, you know, when we spent Christmas with y'all, dad, you kind of, and he's like, what are you talking about?
Exactly.
Well, either like, you're so disrespectful, or that's not what I do. And communication is immediately over at that point. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that I grieve is that is where our work is so important on ourselves. To your point, is to go, I need to know this stuff. And so when my oldest son sits down with me at 25 and goes like, hey, dad, like, this was really hard, that I go, you know, hey man, that's in my programming. Like, I know that about myself.
Yeah.
And thank you for bringing it. And I'm so sorry. And now we can talk about that. It's not, I see that so much in our friends and their parents, and it breaks my heart, because you can see again that the kid is coming going, hey, I want to be together. I want to be united to you. But instead, you know, the parent and, you know, we're all doing the best we can, but it's just sad, because those friends will come out, how was Christmas? Like, it was awful, man. I tried to talk to my mom about this, or my dad and I tried to, and they just shut it down, you know, because they were either offended or they just haven't thought about that. So it felt so accusatory.
Yes.
And they just knew to pull back and sort of, you know.
And then that relationship is stunted. It stops there. It doesn't mean it can't exist, but you think about all those are bids for connection. Mm. We never stop wanting our parents.
Yes.
We never stop wanting to connect with them ever. And you know, it really is. This is, you know, I always think about it as the best metaphor for how God is with us. He never wants us to stop saying, hey God, what was up with that? You know, and he can take that, you know, same as parents, like our kids, and that can go throughout our life. What a beautiful picture of having those adult relationships with kids. That's what we're trying to set ourselves up for, so that Christmases become even more and more and more. I will also say our kids are, one's in college, one just graduated. But the other thing that's pretty cool when they get out in the real world to some degree and they're more separate from you is when they come back and say, wow, our friends didn't get that. Mm. That was cool. And they start to appreciate it.
Wow. Wow.
You know, because they just, so you get the, it's a mix, they get both, you know, they see some of the things that we missed, or they see some of the things that you got, and you just, it's another stage in the journey where you're just kind of like, okay, you know, again, letting go, because they're getting all this different data coming in.
Right.
But so thankful they're coming back to us with the new data. That's the goal.
What has that been like for y'all? Have y'all had those conversations yet where they really do kind of say, hey, like, kind of swung and miss on this, you know, kind of, ooh, you know, how has that been?
Yeah, it started, I don't know, in the last couple of years.
Feel free to cry for as long as you
need and we'll cry with you.
Well, this is where you help each other, I think, as a couple, because sometimes they, well, I will say, maybe this is where your wives might come in, because I will start to notice that they're wanting to maybe point out a thing or two about, and then we do it for each other. And then I'll kind of cue him. I'll be like, I think they need to like kind of talk to you about that way of doing something.
Wow.
Make it safe. And then conversely, you know, they'll be starting to kind of, they push, you know, kids know, they know the buttons and they know how hard. So they'll kind of push a little bit. And then my husband will kind of look at me and be like, you know, they're right about that. Usually for me, it's something along the lines of pleasing somebody, or the fact that I write about boundaries and then I really struggle with them in my real life. And they just think that's hysterical, you know? Yeah. And then it's all funny until, like, you know, it's like, actually that, you know, they'll kind of put their finger on something, and you kind of have to go. And I'm telling you, that's where your partner, you know, if you can really, you know, they're like, oh no, I think they got you on that one. And then you just kind of, you bring it out, and then you circle back and you're like, what was that like for you? But, it is pretty interesting. There's like this point where they just start to get, they're kind of onto something, you know, that, and you're like, wow, they're kind of putting their finger on something that I need to kind of look at.
One of the things, I can't imagine being where y'all are, it's going to be a while for us, but, you know, that I think is really interesting, that I've sort of dread in some ways with our kids, is, you know, hopefully in a healthy relationship, and this is something, you know, I've been working on a lot with my wife, is like, you know, individuating and really staying yourself and not, you know, codependencing yourself into oblivion. But, which is funny, because my wife is like, what does that mean? I'm like, oh, that's good for you. I'm glad that you don't struggle with that. Apparently we're not magnetic enough. But, you know, is that thing where your kids, you know, you are two different parents.
Yeah.
Totally. You know, and so that is something I get. So I'm like, man, when they come in and it's just the eye of Sauron is just on me. Yeah. And my wife has to turn and go, I love you, but you did do that a lot. And I'm like, dadgummit. You know what I mean? Like, knowing it's not always going to be a shared thing. It's like, hey, mom and dad, like, there's something to bring up. It's going to be like, mom, you can leave. So dad, can you sit down? And you're like, oh. You know, and meanwhile, you know, Annie is in the kitchen kind of like eating pudding and laughing and going, yeah, that's what he did. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But knowing you have to have space for that with your, with your partner, and, you know, like, let them be who they are, and they're going to learn things, and the same for you. But that's something that I also have thought so much about lately, is like, in these healthy marriages, hopefully we're working to really stay yourself. That also means you are still yourself, all the good and bad of those things to your kids. And they make, hey, parents, we need to talk to you. And you're kind of like, here we go. And then they're like, mom, you're excused. And you're like, oh, boy.
Yeah.
Okay. So something I wanted to ask you about, because this is something that I think about a lot lately with my girls who are 7 and 10. You know, we talk about, a goal is not to try to keep them from getting wounded, all that kind of stuff. I understand that. And there's no way to do that. And also, if I look at my own life, a lot of the things that I have learned are from pain. You know, you learn from those painful experiences and all that kind of stuff. I pray that my daughters, I can instill confidence in them to navigate through those painful times that they're going to go through. And that on a daily, they're coming home from school with these experiences where they were embarrassed in front of the class and yada, yada, yada. Just all the typical childhood things. And this is one of the things that you work with people and couples and families on, is developing confidence. Mm-hmm. And having a lot of listeners who are parents, what are some things that we can be doing? What advice do you have for us with our kids on how to sort of foster that confidence in them?
Yeah, that is such a great question, because again, we know that kids do need to develop resilience. We know that we cannot rescue them from everything, and that will in fact cause problems in and of itself. However, what's that fine line? What I often say to people is, what's the fine line of where there's a growth opportunity, there's an opportunity for us to empower them to either learn how to speak up for themselves or learn how to tolerate a hard situation? And where's that fine line where they are being injured in a way, and especially injured in a way that is about a power differential, or injured in a way that is doing damage to their psyche, where, you know, there is a point where a parent steps in. And it's a little bit that those waters can be a little bit murky, especially again in our culture where we kind of have gone to these extremes, you know, where I was kind of raised still in that generation of, you know, you just kind of, you just have to tough stuff out, you know?
Yeah.
To
rub
where
some dirt on it.
Yeah, exactly. And now to where there's kind of almost some concern that it goes too far the other way, where kids aren't having enough opportunity to really just, you know, gosh, you don't make the team, and that's hard. You know, that's painful. And we've got to learn, what does it look like? What does resilience look like to walk through that bravely, you know, versus fixing that problem? And I think that's a lot more of what I see right now. And I think just that word, just that kind of giving your kids that language, it's a lot of times what it comes down to is the naming, never trying to like pretend like it doesn't hurt or it isn't what it is, doing all the naming with them. Here's what happened. Here's what's hard. Here's what I feel. Here's what the kids are going to think. Here's what this, here's what's that. And as you're doing that, your kid kind of shows you, okay, all right, okay. You know, I can, you know, I can do this. I can, oh, this was so hard, but you know, this happened, this thing happened, and you kind of watch them, you know, it's like watching them learn to walk. You kind of watch them start to find their way through. It's kind of bumpy and it's hard, but you know, but you're watching it really closely for if there's ever that point where in that piece of kind of trying to walk through pain or walk through something hard, they're falling on the floor and not getting back up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where they're hurting themselves.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, now we need to step in here. This is outside. This is above and beyond your power, your ability to manage this.
You've mentioned a couple of times the power of naming things, which it feels IFS, the internal family systems kind of thing, which I know one of your books is about, which this is a whole thing that just recently I have learned about. Can you talk a little bit about that for some of the listeners that aren't familiar with it?
Yeah. Okay. So I'm trying to think how much to go into the IFS model. It's because it's a little bit complicated, but it's super powerful. But the idea is that we have different parts of ourselves, and some parts of us, there's three key categories of parts. We have parts of us that are our manager parts. These are the parts of us that want to show up well in the world. We want to produce, please perform. We want to do a good job. There are firefighter parts of us. And what that means is they want to go in and put out the flames of pain. So these are the parts of us that want to kind of are more pleasure seeking, more impulsive. They don't want to feel pain at all. So they'll numb out or have a good time or whatever, escape artist parts of us. Both of those parts of us are protecting us. Essentially, managers are protecting us by making sure we keep it all together. Firefighters are protecting us by figuring out how to get rid of the pain as fast as possible. These are not, we all have these. We all have parts of us that work really hard. We all have parts of us that need to check out. This is normal. The goal is healthy balance. And then the third part that we're kind of getting at with this resilience thing are these, what we call in IFS, the founder of it is Richard Schwartz, are these exiled parts of us. And these are the parts of us we don't want to face. These are the parts of us that carry pain, that carry our fears, our shame, that carry our loneliness, that carry our self-doubt, that carry, you know, these are the parts of us. And we typically exiled them way back in childhood. You know, we didn't want to feel lonely when no one was talking to us in fourth grade, you know, and we didn't have anybody around us. I'm just kind of hypothetically speaking, we didn't have any parents around us that could help us name. Yeah, that's really lonely. It's really lonely to be the new kid in fourth grade. I'm with you. It might be lonely for a little while, right? If you don't have that, you bury it. And then guess what you do? You amp up the managing or amp up the firefighting. Mm-hmm. These are where those coping strategies come from. So you're in fourth grade. Nobody's naming that for you. So you're like, well, I'm going to work harder. I'm going to become the crazy class clown, or I'm going to become the derelict. That's how I'll get attention, or whatever. And you get these coping strategies because you can't deal with that loneliness. But when there's someone with you, whatever your kid is dealing with, going, naming what could be exiled, those painful, those, it is hard, right? That is hard. I'm with you. We're watching it together. If it gets too lonely, you know what? We're going to, let's give it, what do you think? Can we give it a couple weeks? And then let's check in again, right? And you're just walking with them. Okay, it's been a year. That's too long. Mm-hmm. We're going to make a change, right? You're naming those painful emotions. And not fixing them, because that's not, that's you managing their pain.
Right, right.
Right.
So because none of the parts are bad, right?
Correct.
The idea is they're all good and they're all necessary. Even the ones that we sort of snap judgment to thinking that these are bad parts of us.
They're all important. They're all valuable. The goal is to hold them in proper balance. Right. And so the harmony is the goal. So the harmony is to understand how to name the hard things and then to self-soothe in healthy ways, you know, like music is, you know, what are these ways when I'm feeling lonely? What are some things I can do that are healthy that make me feel better? Or, you know, what's something, you know, what's a, you know, manager activity that I can do that kind of helps me kind of manage activities tend to be more heady, you know, like, okay, let's solve the problem, which isn't all bad. It's just only one component of the three.
Yeah.
So yeah.
That's great. So we have two, questions we end with, but before I do that, one, this, part of, we're doing Momville for months. We've had, some of our favorite mothers on, and you're one of those, this month. It's something I've tried to ask each of the, ladies that have come on, ladies, God, that felt weird when I said that. As I said it, I was like, I wish I'd said women. Then I was like, gals. Anyway, I digress.
Ladies.
Ladies. Is there a word that, for the moms that are listening, is there any word you have for them as you think about moms, especially this month and Mother's Day and everything?
Oh, gosh. You know, I would say, here's what I would say to the moms. This is something I've learned myself, and I think it's really important, is don't be shy about thinking about what you want for Mother's Day, not meaning like a gift. I mean, maybe it's a gift, but really thinking, naming one thing that would mean a lot to you.
I love that.
And start with yourself, start with God, kind of think about it, and then tell your family, this is something that would mean something to me. Because one of the things I see is just, it's a fraught day. Oftentimes expectations aren't met. We don't want to, you know, we don't want to want, but then we do want, and then we don't get. And then, you know, it's just say, hey, this would be kind of cool. I would kind of love this.
Yeah. That's great. It is such a weird, I mean, we had our wives on a couple of years ago, and it felt like they led us behind the Wizard of Oz cloth on being a mother on Mother's Day. And I mean, do you still think about that, John?
Oh yeah.
My gosh. I mean, one of the things
you,
they said,
just
that was
felt like such an idiot. Cause you're like, I guess I never thought about what Mother's Day is like for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
My wife.
I mean, it was really sobering to realize how much she, you know, like they both just communicated how much they felt like they were having to do to honor mothers in their life, not to mention to be honored.
Yeah.
And it was like, whoa.
Yeah, it's more
work. You talk about expectations, and it's like, I mean, I go into Mother's Day, and I learned this the hard way early on in our marriage, where I missed the boat on Mother's Day. And so now every year I'm like, I just don't want to fail, which is can't be the right way to go into Mother's Day, you know?
I think there's something in us that thinks, well, if we ask for what we need or want, that takes away the beauty of it, but it actually doesn't. I promise you, you know, just to say, you know what I want is I want to do nothing, and I want to plan nothing, and I want to cook nothing.
Yeah.
And then when it happens, it feels great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, too, it's just so much easier for dads. I mean, you know, I love it. You know, Annie has been great about this Mother's Day coming up. She was like, hey, this is kind of, she did exactly what you said. She's like, this is kind of what I want. I was like, I would love to provide that for you.
Yeah.
Thank you a million times. Thank you.
So give me a task.
Yeah.
I will nail it.
okay. So a couple of last questions for you. And we asked this to everybody. Alice, the first one. What is the one thing that you want your kids to know?
That I will always be here for them. Mm. They can tell me anything and that I will receive it as mm-hmm. best I can. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love that.
Okay, last question. This is a big one. What do you want your kids to say at your funeral?
Wow. You guys go for the tears on that one. Oh, gosh. I think in my case, because you know, it's sort of unique for the different situations, right? So mm-hmm. I would say in my case, the answer to that would be because there was so much pain, the context in which I became their mom, really. And I should give mm-hmm. a shout out to stepmoms and second moms on Mother's Day, because that day is also mm-hmm. hard, right?
Yeah,
where you're kind of, you're straddling loss or you're straddling, you know, joy. There's just a lot there. I think for me and with my kids, what would mean a lot is if they said, it's going to bring tears to my eyes, so it must be true. Mm-hmm. If they said I brought them joy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That would mean
that.
A lot to me that they said I brought just some joy, you know, because that's kind of been my goal, is just to come in and just be that reminder of hope and that reminder of goodness and joy and in the world.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Well, you have brought us joy.
Yes. Right. Amen to that. You and happy early joy. Mother's Day too, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely.